Now we will learn more about multilateral effectiveness. I'm happy to introduce one of the world's leading scholars in this area. She's a professor of politics and international affairs at Princeton University in New Jersey and also the director of the Niehaus Center for Globalization and Governance at Princeton Woodrow Wilson School. Welcome, welcome, Helen B. Milner. An applause. I'm going to get this microphone.
Well, thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be here. It's my first time in Sweden and in Stockholm, so I look forward this afternoon to getting a little tour around. But it's very interesting for me to be able to talk to you about all these issues at this time. The presentation I'm going to give you is sort of a mashup of three different sort of projects that I've been working on. And one of these was to look at donors and the relationship between publics and their governments in terms of foreign aid, which was this project on why multilateralism. The second one was to look particularly at the United States and ask a question about why in the United States does the government give this percentage of multilateral aid that it gives? And what is the public, what are the reasons that people prefer bilateralism or unilateralism versus multilateralism? And the third project is one about what do recipients, and in this case we were looking at Uganda, and I think we did one of the first studies, systematic studies, of a recipient's attitudes toward multilateral versus bilateral aid organizations. And I'll show you at the end a little bit of the data on that. But the important point is to remember that aid is in many ways this complicated relationship between donors and between recipients, as well as within each country on the donor side between publics, interest groups, and governments, and then on the recipient side between publics, interests, and governments. So you have a very complicated type of relationship in foreign aid, and when you add a multilateral channel, I think this makes it even more complicated. So just to start out and repeat a little bit of what Hans said, governments can give aid, as you know, through two different channels in the large detail. One is basically unilaterally, they can just give it to another government, a recipient government, or they can go through one of the different institutions, the international institutions that we have, and give aid. And one of the questions is, why do governments choose these different channels? And if you look over time at the data, different governments, which I will show you, choose different amounts. And governments over time change the amounts that they choose through these different channels. And one of the puzzles is, why is this going on? So multilateralism, unilateralism, as we both said, basically is this government's choosing to give, say, a certain percentage of aid to Uganda versus Mozambique or something like that. Multilateral is to choose a channel, such as the UN, the EU, or the World Bank, and to give their aid through that channel. And usually these multilateral channels, aid is coordinated in the sense that governments get together with the international institution, and they design a program for how that aid is going to be used, and then the governments give the aid through that channel. Multilateralism in this context also implies a set of principles that guide the delivery of that aid. The Millennium Development Goals serve as the substantive principles for aid giving, and they were about, as you saw from Hans' slides, about things like vaccinations for children, about having poverty, having illiteracy, and things like that. But there are also a set of goals about the delivery of aid that were set forth in the Paris Declaration and the Accra Agenda that have been developed by the donor governments about choosing more effective aid channels and practices that the multilaterals are supposed to follow. And so multilateralism has, I think, a couple of different meanings that are important. One, it's channeled through an international institution, And two, it's channeled according to certain principles that have been agreed upon in that multilateral organization. In terms of foreign aid, when we look back through history, it's very notable that many people have thought that aid should always be channeled totally through multilateral channels rather than through government channels. And that it's, when you look at some of the data on aid, when you look at, again, sort of the best practices, you'll see that it looks like the multilaterals are doing a better job than the bilaterals. They tend to be less geared toward donors' interests and more geared towards the recipient's needs. And this has been one of the big debates in the aid literature, is whether aid serves the donors or the recipients. And the naive view, of course, is that, aid always serves the recipients. But that's simply not the case, as we know, because politics intervenes in both the donors and the recipients to, in a sense, make this a much more complicated kind of process than otherwise. So given the fact that many people agree that aid should be multilateral, and much of the data suggests that multilateral aid better serves recipient needs, why is it the case that multilateral aid is, in effect, so small? Why don't we see all of aid, 100% of the Swedish aid budget going multilaterally, or the U.S. aid budget? We simply don't see this. And here is just some data, and again, my data is going to differ from Hans's data a bit, because these are statistics that are taken directly from the OECD. The OECD has a set of definitions that it uses so that it can, in a sense, report standardized aid budget data from all the countries in the donor coordination system, which is roughly 27, 28 countries. It uses these standard definitions, and then each country individually reports to the DAC its data on those standard definitions. So this allows cross-national comparison. I think what the expert group is doing is they're looking at Swedish data, and they're looking at how they want to characterize it. So this is going to be slightly different. But what you see here is from 1965 to about 2011, the percentage of official development assistance, that's what ODA stands for, the commitments that are made, and commitments are different than disbursements. Countries will make a commitment in 1 year, and that aid may not be dispersed for a number of years. And so the data do look different. The disbursement data looks fairly similar, however, to the commitment data in terms of overall patterns, so I'm not going to show you both. But what you have here is the percentage that has been given in terms of multilateral commitments over time. And what you can see is that in the earlier periods, it rose up to about an average of 30%, and it has stayed at 30% and recently dropped a little bit below that. What you can see from Sweden is that it started much higher and again has come down and is now right around the average, although it has grown a little bit over time. This is, the blue line is total ODA commitments of all the countries. The red line is the multilateral commitment in terms of billions of dollars now from 1965 to 2011. And what you should notice is the divergence between total commitments and multilateral commitments. And that divergence is growing. So the percentage of commitments that are done multilaterally is actually decreasing over time, rather than increasing, despite the fact that the data suggest that multilateral commitments do a better job of delivering for recipient needs. This is the Swedish case and Swedish total ODA and Swedish multilateral commitments. And again, what you can see is that that divergence is growing as well in Sweden. These are just to give you a sense of when we talk about who the multilateral donors are, who are we really talking about? The largest bar is the EU institutions. The second largest is IDA, which is the World Bank. And then you have the Global Fund, Asian Development Bank, African Development Bank, all the UN programs, the Arab Fund, the Inter-American, and then some of the specialized funds such as Gavi and GEF. I should say that over time, what's happened is there's been a proliferation of multilateral institutions. And again, the expert group will probably be very aware of this. We've gone from a very few number, mainly the World Bank and the regional development banks early on to a proliferation, with the EU getting involved very much and with institutions like the Global Fund, Gavi, and GEF growing over time. This is just each multilateral institution over time, so that you can see that the multilaterals, who's giving aid, in effect, is changing over time. And again, you can see that the Global Fund here didn't exist a number of years ago, and it's starting over time. Who are the top multilateral donors in the world? Of the DAC countries, you might be surprised by this list. Again, you have Turkey, Italy, the Czech Republic, Greece. These are the top groups. You'll notice that Sweden, according to this data, is not in that top group. It turns out that Sweden is about, among the DAC donors, about 27, 28 of them, Sweden is about in the middle in terms of its giving multilaterally, according to this data. Here again, you can look at, this is a variety of different donors. This is the percentage of their aid that's given multilaterally. Sweden is over here. What you can see is, again, it's come down over time. And its aid now, its multilateral aid now, the percentage is lower than for a number of other countries, for instance, for the UK, Finland, and even France and Germany are giving larger percentages now in terms of this data multilaterally. This is a different chart. This is an attempt to look at the effectiveness of donors. And William Easterly, who was at the World Bank for a long, long time, has written a number of papers where he's tried to assess the effectiveness of different institutions, both bilateral and multilateral. So you'll see here that you have, in terms of the sort of highest ranking ones, the Nordic Development Fund, the Global Fund again, Asian and African Development Banks, and then you have a number of the bilaterals, starting with the UK. DFID is known as one of the best aid organizations around, one of the most interesting. The World Bank, EU, IADB, EBRD, IMF. Easterly has come up with a number of different sort of criteria for categorizing these institutions, and there's obviously debate about those criteria. But what you will notice is, again, the multilateral average is above the bilateral average in terms of these criteria. And this is one more piece of data that, again, suggests that the multilateral agencies may be doing a better job of delivering in terms of the criteria that the donors have agreed upon. Here again are the average scores for just a series of the multilateral donors, so you get a feel for how they're ranking. Again, the Nordic Development Fund does very, very well, in part because it specializes very heavily in climate change, and specialization is seen as an important goal here. It's a very small fund relative to these others, so the fact that it scores very well has something to do with the fact that it's highly concentrated. The way I want to talk about this multilateralism is to simply suggest that there's a kind of framework that you can use to think about how to deal with multilateralism and the kind of problems that arise with multilateralism. And for any of you who've done some economics, you'll know that one of the main frameworks in economics is called the principal agent framework. And in this framework, it's also used a good deal in politics because, as you'll see, it's very much part of a democratic arrangement as well. And it really focuses on the interaction of different sets of actors who have a principal and an agent, who have different preferences, but who depend upon each other to get things done, and who have different sort of levels of information about things. The problem is that in these complicated relationships between principals and agents, which are a myriad in our modern world, you can have very suboptimal outcomes, and there's concern about this. So just very briefly, what I want to suggest to you is that in this multilateral relationship, You have a principal, which is basically the government of Sweden, let's say, and CETA within that, who is giving aid to an agent, which is something like the World Bank or the EU institutions or the UN. And the principal then is delegating, the Swedish government is delegating to that multilateral agency the responsibility for delivering aid. And the agent, the multilateral, has discretion over how that aid is going to be given. The principal decides usually to give that delegation and that discretion because it believes that the agent actually has better information and is better able to avoid some of the politics that the principal faces, and therefore that it in a sense gives this relationship to the agent. There are a variety of things that are involved in these models. I won't sort of bore you with this. Just let's say that these principal-agent relations, as you can imagine, have a number of problems associated with them that are well known in the literature. I want to just mention two of them, the bottom two. One is a failure to delegate. And if the agents, if the multilateral institutions do have better information about aid giving, and if they are better able to follow the criteria that have been set forward by the donors, it is a problem if the bilaterals do not delegate to them, because it means you're getting less good aid provision. And this often happens, and you can see it in the data I've shown you, right? The bilaterals are not delegating as much as they probably should be. And I'll talk to you in a minute about why this is the case, but failure to delegate is a problem, just as much as the last point is, in a sense, too much delegation and too much discretion. And this is basically that the agent, the multilateral, then takes the money and goes off and does what it wants in aid giving, and that makes the principal unhappy. For the United States, every time the World Bank or other institutions start talking about giving Cuba or Iran foreign aid, as you can imagine, the American Congress just goes nuts. They don't want this to be done, and I'm sure there are things that the World Bank or the EU institutions do that drive the Swedish government nuts as well. And this is the kind of agent discretion that may be a good thing in the long run, but the governments may not like it. The point is that in this principal-agent relationship, there are costs and benefits. And if governments are rational, they'll only delegate up to the point in which the benefits outweigh the costs. And the main cost is this loss of control. When you have a bilateral relationship, you can basically give the money to the sectors, the country, and the amounts that you want as a government. And that may be a complicated thing to decide within the government, but it's decided by the government and given. With a multilateral agency, you're bargaining with 27 other donors about how that aid is going to be given, who it's going to be given to, how much is going to be given, and what type of aid is going to be given, what channels it's going to go through. Therefore, it is always the case that, in a sense, when Sweden gives aid to the EU or the World Bank, it's never going to go exactly in the way and channels that it would if it was done bilaterally. There is a loss of control, and that's part of the point of having this principal-agent relationship, because that control may not always be the best thing. And why might that control not always be the best thing? Well, let's not talk about Sweden. Let's think about the United States, which has a wonderfully functional government, as you've all seen recently. You can well imagine that in fighting between the Republicans and the Democrats, when they come up with an aid budget, it is not the most rational aid budget in the world, right? And it would often be better simply to give that money to the World Bank than it would be to have the Republicans and Democrats fighting over who's going to get that money and how it's going to be given and what kind of restrictions are going to be put on it. And so control, which many domestic publics and many domestic politicians think is a great thing, may not be the greatest thing in the long run, especially to serve recipient needs. The benefits of multilateral aid giving are that it may be better directed toward recipient needs. These decisions, these collective decisions about aid giving, may be less politicized and more likely to address recipient needs. And there may be burden sharing involved as well. That is, when the U.S. And IDA, actually within the World Bank, the repeated rounds of funding through IDA only work if enough countries give money. And they're conditioned on every country giving a certain amount. So again, the problems here, the costs of multilateralism are loss of control. The benefits are collective decisions and burden sharing among the different groups. These are some sort of quotes about burden sharing and control that I'll sort of leave you with and sort of move on. But again, the control issue is very important because of these different goals in aid. If we all agreed on what the goals of aid were and we could keep every government focused, every donor government focused on those goals, I think we would be okay. The problem is that aid often gets politicized, even in the donors, and special interest groups want aid to be used in a certain way. And publics want aid to be used in a certain way, and politicians may want to use aid to help domestic interest groups or parts of the country or certain companies, and donors may want to use aid for geostrategic purposes. You may want to give aid to somebody who's going to help you in being an ally in the future, or you may want to give aid to a country where you think it's going to change its policies to be more kind of compatible with your own policies. These types of geostrategic concerns are much more evident, I think, in the larger countries such as the United States, Japan, France, the UK, than they may be in some of the smaller countries. And I don't know enough about Sweden to know exactly what this is, but my bet is that in looking at things, in countries where Sweden has had a longer historical relationship, it's probably giving more aid, and again, this is often for has some kind of mixed motives related to it. And again, there's this concern over control that different countries and governments have, and that tends to be important. Again, to the extent to which control matters, the point is that if governments and publics in the donor countries, if their goals were completely aligned with those of recipients and those of the multilaterals, we would have no problem here. Everybody's goals would be going in the same direction, and therefore you wouldn't worry about using a multilateral, and you wouldn't worry about the recipients either. But the problem is that we have different goals, and those goals change over time, and a lot of them are driven by donor politics and donor goals rather than often recipient needs. We did work on U.S. attitudes toward multilateral aid, a series of surveys, and we wanted to ask if this principal-agent perspective was supported. I'm not going to spend too much time on this. Let me just say that in the United States, when you ask systematically about bilateral versus multilateral aid, you can see that the percentages are very strong in favor of bilateralism. I don't know what those would be in Europe. We haven't done these kind of studies. When I was giving these papers in various conferences in Germany and Switzerland, I was very surprised because when we would ask the audience to vote on whether they should give multilateral or bilateral aid, it was, again, the Germans and the Swiss, especially the Swiss, preferred bilateral aid. It was quite interesting. I had expected all the Europeans to be much more multilateral, and clearly the Swiss and the Germans weren't. And the Swiss basically told us that they trusted their agencies much more than they trusted the UN or the bank. We asked the American public what were their reasons for preferring unilateralism, and control was the main reason. And here you can see again, this is the percentages of the American public that are saying these things in control is huge for preferences about unilateralism. Again, for multilateralism, sharing the costs of aid was the top reason why those who preferred multilateralism preferred it in this case. So let me just say that again, delegation and aid is a very complex process. The first step is that publics, in effect, tell their governments, you can use our tax dollars to give money away to groups outside the country. That's the first delegation step. And the public has to trust that the government is going to do that well. And sometimes publics trust that, and sometimes publics don't. The argument we made in a first paper was that when publics do not trust the government, they really want the government to go through multilateral channels because they trust these multilateral institutions more. And Italy is an interesting case of this. Italy is one of the most multilateral donors in the European context, and it's because the Italians simply do not trust their own government. And what we looked at in Italy was the percentage of the population that wanted multilateral aid versus bilateral. And every time there was an aid scandal or a government scandal in Italy, that percentage went up. And so it was very clear that the lack of trust between the public and the government has an effect on what channel they want. The second channel is then this international institutional link, which I've been talking about, which is when the government of Sweden delegates to the UN or the World Bank. And again, that's a complex principal-agent relationship that we've been talking about. The third link, then, is what happens when that international institution, the World Bank, gives it to a recipient like, say, Uganda. And again, the World Bank or CETA is worried about what's going to happen with that step in the delegation chain as well. And so these three steps are very complicated, and they make aid giving, again, a very complicated process. As I mentioned this about this domestic politics of delegation and lack of trust in your own governments and therefore donors pushing for more multilateralism. This is a chart of recent European attitudes from the Eurobarometer in 2013 support for foreign aid. And I think it's very remarkable here that the EU average of support in 2013, given the financial crisis, is well over 60% support increasing aid, which is quite a strong percentage. You can see here, this is Sweden. Again, one of the top, not the top. There are a couple of others that are higher, but again, at the public here is very supportive of aid. This again, this is the U.S. This is a completely different story. Expanding aid, this is the Europeans. 60% want to expand aid despite the financial crisis. This is the Americans. This is expand aid down here at 10%. Cut aid is up here, the green bars, at close to 50-60%. So while the U.S. gives the largest absolute amount of aid, it gives one of the smallest percentages of its GDP in terms of aid. But the American public is simply not supportive of aid. And again, the more the governments are not trusted, the more the public wants multilateral aid, as I said. Let me just turn in the last few minutes here to recipients and what countries, poor countries, when they're getting aid, think about it. So we went to Uganda and we did one of the first systematic surveys ever asking the Ugandan public as well as Ugandan elites what they thought of different aid donors. And we wanted to see whether they would recognize different aid donors, and they did, and what they thought of them, and whether they preferred multilateral or bilateral donors. And the surprising thing was, perhaps not surprising, is that they preferred multilateral ones, at least in the kind of survey that we did. And here is Ugandans, this is about a representative survey of Ugandans, about 4,000 Ugandans. And we asked them about Chinese government aid because the Chinese have, as you know, started giving aid, and they're actually very big in sub-Saharan Africa. The U.S. government, the African Development Bank and the World Bank, and the levels of trust. And what you can see is that the bilaterals have substantially lower levels than the multilaterals here. This is when we asked the Ugandans what they thought of the international institutions as a whole, USAID, the World Bank, UNDP, the African Development Bank, versus their own domestic institutions, their president, their party, their parliament, their MPs, their lower levels of government. There's more trust in all of these international institutions than there was in the domestic institutions. And we thought that was also interesting. So why do Ugandans think multilateral institutions are better than bilateral ones? Well, we asked them a number of questions, and the areas in which it turned out that they thought the multilaterals were better were trust. They trusted the multilaterals like the World Bank and the regional development banks more than they trusted the Americans or the Chinese. We didn't ask them about the Swedish. We didn't ask them about the British, so it could be different if we asked them about different bilateral donors. But with the ones we did, they trusted the multilaterals more. They thought they were more transparent. There was no difference on conditionality, but the interesting thing about conditionality was we asked Ugandans whether they thought conditionality was a good thing for the Ugandan economy or a bad thing for the Ugandan economy. And over 50% of Ugandans thought the conditionality was a good thing. And again, they think this is a good thing because they're worried about these funds being politicized and used by their governments for purposes that they don't want. And so while conditionality, the value of conditionality doesn't differ between multilateral and bilateral agencies, it differs substantially between domestic and international ones. Let me just say that you can also have multilateralism in other areas, such as the military, and NATO is an example of this, or in international trade, such as in the WTO. And it was interesting for us to note that Americans, and I don't know how Europeans would react on this, Americans much preferred multilateralism in military areas and in trade to multilateralism in foreign aid. I'm not exactly sure why, but it was an interesting kind of finding. And in the United States, at least, left voters are always more sympathetic to aid and more sympathetic to multilateralism in the United States than they are elsewhere. We're now doing some work coding party manifestos across the EU to look at whether this is true, whether the left is more supportive of aid and of multilateralism in the European context as well as in the American context. I don't know the answer to that, but it is something we're looking at. So let me just say in conclusion, bilateralism versus multilateralism is a very important choice in foreign policy in general. It's an important choice for governments in terms of aid giving. We think that multilateral channels do a better job of serving recipient needs. But we don't see in the data that many governments follow this. Most of them still give more bilateral aid than they give multilateral aid. And we think it's due to this loss of control and this fear of loss of control that drives them through this principal-agent relationship. And what can be done? I know we can talk more about this in the Q&A, and I think other people will as well. One thing that can be done, obviously, is to try and make the preferences about aid giving converge more in multilateral institutions and in bilateral ones. This is hard because you have 27 or 28 donors bargaining in the multilateral ones, and therefore Sweden and Swedish preferences don't have the kind of oomph that they would domestically, but you can try this. You can also try tighter monitoring, but again, the monitoring issue and other kind of types of controls on multilateral institutions then lead to a loss of delegation, and this creates its own problems. When you put real constraints on the IMF, on the World Bank, or the EU institutions about how they can give aid, and every bilateral donor does this, you no longer have a multilateral sort of setting. And you've lost the discretion that the agencies need to do the kind of job that they need to do. And that usually makes the multilateral less willing to kind of work very hard to do this. So there's this complex set of trade-offs that the principal agent model kind of identifies for you in this. So I will leave it there, and thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My microphone seems to have gone. Can you hear me? Yeah. Thank you. We will now ask two experts to come up and comment on this. But before that, you really should continue to examine the audiences around Europe. What about the Swedish preferences? You should do that.
I would love to.
So, Can we ask them?
Sure.
All of those who prefer multilateral here in the audience, please raise your hand now. Okay, did you?
So about half?
Half. Now, all of those who prefer unilateral, we call it today, you can raise your hand now.
Bilateral.
Okay, bilateral. So it was half and then one third.
Yeah.
Then silence.
So, but how many of you would prefer that Sweden give 100% of its aid through multilateral channels?
Hans Rosling.
Two people.
Including Hans. Thank you very much.